It's time to talk birds on the Tuesday morning show. We are glad to have back with us from the Brainerd Lakes area, retired DNR non-game wildlife biologist Pam Perry joins us to talk birds. Morning, Pam. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Heidi. Good morning, John.
Hi, Pam. Nice to see you. So...
I like the Zoom because I get to see you and Heidi.
Yeah. What's going on at your feeder?
Oh, the feeders are not as interesting as yours. I heard you had 40 evening grosbeaks.
Yes. What a thrill. And my daughter and her husband were here. And I don't think my daughter has maybe once has seen evening grosbeaks before. And as an artist and a graphic designer, she was really impressed.
They're impressive birds.
They are.
And they haven't been around for a couple decades.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And with that. And so my feeders are boring. There's not much happening there. And I know I heard, and Heidi said earlier too, that I was going to talk about birds, but I really wanted to talk about mammals.
Mammal suits me.
If that's okay.
Just don't bring up muskrats because Heidi's a little.
Oh, no. I did want to say something about muskrats right away.
Okay.
Perfect.
Because I heard that too. and I just wanted to add, for Heidi's benefit, that muskrats, their mounds make nesting spots for several bird species, like Canada geese. I've seen cranes nest on them too, and they're a site for turtles to bask. When the turtles want to get warmed up, they climb up on the muskrat mounds to get some sun.
Yes.
There are good things, Heidi.
Okay, I will try to bring in this new information. You know, I'm just used to kind of shorelines collapsing and falling through kind of stuff some of the things that happen where
I
live.
And I know they do that. It's just that's just something they do.
Okay. All right. I will.
There's good things too. And I loved hearing the story, the native origin story. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just such a great addition to hear.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, what did you have in mind for mammals?
Well, it was towards evening. You know, there was still some light. And I was letting my dogs out into the backyard. I have a fenced backyard. And, you know, they wanted to go out. And I saw some movement under my bird feeder. And I thought, oh, I need to take a look. What is this? I thought I knew what it was. And so then when I got back in the house and I, you know, can get a better look kind of from my dining room window down at it. And it was a short-tailed shrew. And I've seen them before in the winter because they'll show up against the snow. But I find them so interesting. And I know they're there, but I don't see them very often because they are mostly nocturnal. And they are under the snow, mostly, in the winter. And then, of course, once we get into summer, you just can't see them. They're just camouflaged too much against the ground. But so I wanted to say a few interesting things about short-tailed shrews. You know, and I had some friends when I said, oh, I saw a short-tailed shrew, and they looked it up and said, oh, it looks like a mouse. I said, no, it's not a mouse.
Not at all.
That size, they're 3 to 4 inches, but they have a long snout, a long pointy snout. And rodents, like mice or muskrats, have big front teeth, and that's why they can bite so much. But these are teeth for chewing on things. And shrews eat primarily invertebrates, worms, bugs, snails, insects, but they also eat small vertebrates like mice. And you go, how in the world can a 3 to 4 inch shrew eat a mouse? Well, they have, and John, I know you've said this on the show, that they have venom, and they do. They are one of the few venomous mammals. And I find that just absolutely fascinating.
Absolutely. It is.
They're amazing. Just so different. I did a little looking into the type of venom that they have. And of course, this is not a venom that's going to kill people. It might cause some irritation if you got bit. But they mostly use it. It's a neurotoxin, and they use it to subdue their prey. And because sometimes they can kill something, a mouse or a vole that's a little bigger, close to their size, and they could get very hurt by those rodent teeth. And so they inject, they bite, and it's in the, from their teeth, and they get this neurotoxin into them, and that's how they subdue them.
Now, when you say it's from their teeth, is it in their saliva, or actually, so they don't.
Yeah, but it's the all those little teeth biting in, and then the saliva. Yeah,
okay.
They don't inject like a snake.
Yeah.
The other thing that's really interesting about these critters is that they have to eat a lot, and they cache food in the winter. What was the statistic? They have to eat their weight in food. 3 times their weight every day or something. I mean, they eat some incredible amount of food. They have a very high metabolism. And so how do they do that in the winter? And then I was thinking, what are they doing under my feeder? And because they do seem to be eating some seeds, and they will eat some of that, but they cache food, you know, so they have caches under the snow, underground. I'm not sure. I think they go down into some of those vole tunnels and things like that, and then they'll cache their food and then eat it during the winter as well, besides being active like I saw Thursday evening. And then I saw it again Saturday night a little after 6:30 when it was totally dark, and I looked out there and I could see this little dark thing just running around in the snow.
Yeah, they are the shrew family. Amazing critters. The short-tailed shrew you're talking about, and then the little thumb-sized guy. Mm-hmm. Is that the masked or the pygmy?
Yeah, the pygmy is really small. Then there's a water shrew, the masked.
That's
shrew.
The one that fascinates me. The water shrew.
Yeah.
Actually, I read this. They swim. They exhale a bubble out against anything they encounter and inhale it, and they can smell and know if it's edible while they're underwater, which is astonishing.
It's absolutely astonishing. And the other thing, even the short-tailed shrew, and I think this is true for many of the shrews, they have really reduced ears and eyes. They rely on smell, and it's that big snout where they're taking in. That's how they feel their environment is with that.
Yeah,
so that's what I wanted to really share today was, don't forget to look under your bird feeders towards night. And you may also have one of these short-tailed shrews running around at this time of year.
I'm glad you brought that up, really, because I meant to say something during the phenology show and then just kind of passed over it. But yesterday, while I was out walking just after this new snowfall, there were dozens and dozens of different sets of tracks on top of the snow, which tells me, according to what Harry would have told me, these are probably mice or some other small. These are smaller than squirrels. You can see that.
Right.
I mean, the squirrel track is pretty obvious. These were tiny, tiny little tracks all over the place.
Right. And some of those could be short-tailed shrews. Because they are hunting, they are getting active, and they're going to be going into their mating season, raising young and doing, I mean, everything's starting to get more active. We're certainly getting into that season.
Yeah, it's astonishing. We oftentimes think of spring as sort of this thing that takes place in April when we start to see leaves coming out and flowers happening. But truly, spring begins like back in February when the great horned owls are nesting, and then coming through February as we get more and more activity among the mammals. There really is a lot going on.
Yes. And that's a reminder to listen for owls in the evening as well, because they're getting active. I get barred owls primarily around my house. I haven't heard them yet, But I haven't been outside a lot because it has been sort of cold.
Has it?
Yes, until, you know, yesterday when I checked the temp, it was 22 degrees in the morning. The week before, it was minus 29.
Yeah.
1 week before. Only in Minnesota, right?
Yeah, yeah. This friend of mine, Deacon Kylander, who went, he had gone out to California to visit his family. Propitiously, he left at just the right moment because he said when he arrived in San Diego, the temperature difference between Grand Rapids and San Diego was 103 degrees.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, and even the temperature difference here yesterday was 50 degrees.
Yeah. Well, I had 60. Not yesterday, but a week ago.
Right.
Yeah. I had 29 below or 30 below in the morning. And this morning I had 30, 31, 32 above. So. Amazing.
Right. And we can all stay nice and warm in our houses with our wood stoves and all that. But when you think about how the plants and the animals and everything else outside manages these times, it's always interesting.
You know, there's a lot of stuff on the edges, but it all boils down to fuel, doesn't it?
It does.
All food.
It's all about food. If they can get enough food, they survive. If they don't, they don't.
That's one of the things.
And that's why I was thinking about that shrew so much and knowing that they burn so much. They go through so much food. How is it getting enough food to survive?
Do you have any knowledge of how they, do they den up? Do they have a little nest? How do they stay warm when they're not feeding? I mean, they must not sleep a lot because if you've got to eat 3 to 5 times your body weight in food every day, you're pretty busy chewing.
I'm not totally sure. I think they make a little nest. You know, they have to have something for their young. Certainly do that for if the females do. But you know, they're not social. They're very solitary. And so I think they just nap. They must just nap.
I suppose. Eat a big meal, then, go to sleep.
Yeah. Eat.
I've done that.
Take a nap. Go through that. So I do have one bird sighting I want to report. Sunday I looked out at my feeders and there was a bird perched two posts with a crossbar, and I often get birds that come in and perch there, and there was a bird perched there, and it was a sharp-shinned hawk. And so this bird is migrating. It's following other flocks of birds, and that's certainly, for me, a sign of spring.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. The robin, by the time the robins get here, that's not always my first sign of spring. I've usually seen quite a few other signs before that.
Well, on Sunday morning, I think it was, the Phoebe song was just everywhere. Every chickadee in my yard seemed to be singing Phoebe, and I hear the nuthatches with their ink, 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 ink call. Yep. It's just like everybody's talking about it.
everybody's getting more active, for sure. Yeah. And I'm looking at the weather forecast going, yep, it's just going to continue here.
All right. Pam? I always enjoy a conversation with you, and it won't be too long, and I'm going to hit you up on amphibians because we'll be getting into the season of singing frogs and turtles coming out to bask on those muskrat houses. So stick around. There are a lot more questions you can help us.
Yes, and you know I love to talk about frogs and turtles.
I do know that. Thanks for joining us this morning. Pam Perry is a retired DNR non-game wildlife biologist and a lady of many, many interests. Thanks again, Pam.
Bye-bye.
We'll talk to you again soon. I'm confident of that. Mm-hmm.